Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Seth, I wanted to bounce this off you. I got some numbers I want to get into here in a second. And this is, let me preface this. I feel like anytime we say something positive about Bill O'Brien, we need to preface it by saying, look, I know this is going to sound like I'm sticking up for Bill O'Brien and that I'm making excuses for Bill O'Brien. I'm not. But I got a tweet from a few people the other day. I did a post for the Houston Press. I do five posts a week there. And I did a post where I talked in writing. I wrote about something you and I had talked about on the air, which is that Bill O'Brien needs to stop spinning these meaningless touchdowns and blowouts into some sort of narrative about how the offense is doing just fine. We moved the football. No, you didn't move the football when the game was really being hotly contested. So I wrote a post about how he needs to stop doing that. Within that post, I made the comment that, you know, despite the fact that Bill O'Brien has been an above average NFL head coach during his time with the Houston Texans, .. And I did the rest of the piece. And that was the thing that got the most reaction in the piece, was that I said that Bill O'Brien was an above average head coach in the NFL during his six seasons here. And look, I think Bill O'Brien needs to get this team further in the postseason. Bill O'Brien thinks he needs to get this team further in the postseason. And Bill O'Brien absolutely has his blind spots, which I think we highlight just the optimal amount here on this show. But they asked me, like, why do you think he's above average? And Seth, my answer to them was, well, average is 16th. And I think his body of work is better than the 16th body of work over the last 5 or 6 years. He's one, you know, not trying to sound like I'm doing an infomercial for the team, but go find me 16 other head coaches who've, you know, won four divisions and gotten to the playoffs and been above 500 all but 1 year over that time. It's above average.
It's the least comfortable and like most shameful argument I get into regularly, because I end up getting in a conversation with somebody who acts like if I don't say that Bill O'Brien is the worst coach who ever lived, then I'm sticking up for Bill O'Brien. And it's like, but I do get it and I understand it. And I think that this is where I think sometimes even coaches or organizations themselves don't understand this. Like nobody will ceaselessly talk about how you always got to be ascending more than an NFL coach. And yet when it comes to evaluating themselves, like, hey, we've won a bunch of division championships. Like, right? Hey, give me a little bit of credit. Like, they would never accept that from their players. Never would they accept a player to come in and be like, hey, you know what, coach? I was pretty good last year. And, you know, like, hey, don't be too tough on me. Right. Because I've been putting in the same performance the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's always like, no, you got to be getting better. You got to be getting better. So look at Andy Reid. Andy Reid, when he was in Philadelphia, by the time he was done in Philadelphia, despite having gone to four straight NFC championship games, there were people in Philadelphia that thought he was a horrible football coach, because that's just human nature. Once you plateau, it just feels like, all right, I'm stagnant. I'm not going anywhere. What's a football coach always tell you? Hey, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. Stagnancy feels like you're getting worse, especially when it happens over time. So in a lot of Texans fans' minds, it doesn't make rational sense to say that Bill O'Brien is an awful coach or the worst coach in the NFL or anything. Like, but emotionally to them, they feel it because they've been stagnant for a while.
Yeah, there's a reason I'm bringing this up. I'm not just bringing it up gratuitously. It does play into some numbers that I'm about to share with you. And shout out to our friend Omar with Texans PR, who sent over stats every week of all shapes and sizes. But these are, I think, stats that are relevant stats to this game. But before we get to that, here's Bill O'Brien on the performances around the league in week one.
For the most part, all the games were competitive. I thought it was really good. I think, you know, we looked at some things. I think it's the teams that played the cleanest. It's the teams that won the penalty battle, won the turnover battle. I think they won 85% of the games this week. The teams that won the penalty battle, but maybe they lost the turnover battle, they won, I think it was like 80% of the game. So I think it still comes down to that. Playing cleaner football. You know, last week we start out, we gain positive yards on the first play. The second play is incomplete. The third play, we jump off sides. Like, if we can play a cleaner game, I think that's a big part of what it's just fundamentally, you know, making sure that we eliminate the administrative penalties, you know, the false starts, the legal formations, the neutral zone infractions. You're going to get holding calls. You're going to get DPIs. Those things are going to happen. Legal contacts, those things may happen. But it's the mental mistakes that we have to really clean up, because the teams that really did that well, they won for the most part. So we're working hard on that this week to clean a lot of that up.
The stats back up O'Brien on the turnover part of what he was saying, Seth. The Texans are 17-1 under Bill O'Brien when they don't turn the ball over. They're 32-6 under O'Brien when they win the turnover battle. So the numbers, those are percentages that are the league percentages are probably skewed very positively towards teams that don't turn the ball over and or win the turnover battle. Those records, though, 17-1 and 32-6, are beyond even what the normal percentages are for the league.
Well, right, yeah, those are way beyond the normal percentages. Usually you have a convincing victory margin or percentage victories with turnover differential, but that's pretty exaggerated. And I do think that this is where, and this is what I've maintained pretty much the entire time Bill O'Brien has been here. I haven't known what the ceiling is for O'Brien, but I know that the floor is that O'Brien, much more so than a lot of coaches in the NFL, just simply runs a tight ship. And it might not seem like it at time because, hey, mistakes happen in the NFL and penalties happen and all of that, but just by virtue of running a tight ship, you're better than a third of NFL coaches. A third of NFL coaches right now, this very moment, do not belong in the NFL. They got the job because they were good coordinators, or maybe they're good interviews. Maybe they're good college coaches, but they're not good NFL coaches. They simply don't belong. Those guys will get rolled out. Maybe another third belong, but there's something missing. Maybe some of them are brilliant, but they're sloppy on the discipline side, and maybe some are super disciplined, but they're dullards. And maybe those guys don't belong. O'Brien is somewhere between, hey, he runs a tight ship, his teams are disciplined, his teams fight hard. I think he gets the most out of some of the subpar and mediocre players. My biggest reservation with him is always, I don't know how much he gets the genuine max out of his better players. And I don't know how much he takes. I think he turns some guys into acceptable football players, but I don't think he turns a lot of guys into, like, wow, this guy's way above and beyond what the scouts expected him to be.
Yeah, my biggest issue with him is he came to the Texans as an offensive coach. We know what his resume was in New England, where he was a wide receivers coach, a QB coach. Eventually, he was calling the plays up in New England. He goes to Penn State. He's the head coach, and he actually got a good season out of Christian Hackenberg, which might be his most amazing feat in his entire coaching career. But he came here. He's an offensive coach, and he finally has a franchise quarterback, and he hasn't had an offense that's been in the upper half of the league in six seasons since he got here. That's my biggest issue. I have a huge issue with head coaches whose side of the ball where they ply their trade, where they cut their teeth, when that side of the ball is not performing on a long-term basis. And this is a long-term basis. How does an offensive coach, how does a guy who's been an offensive coach his whole career, coordinating offenses, coaching different offensive position groups, and now with Deshaun Watson as his quarterback, with mounds and mounds and layers of draft equity invested in an offensive line, not have an offense that's even in the upper half of the league? It's inexcusable.
Right. Right, yeah. Right. And that's where it comes into, okay, I think he runs a tight ship. I think it's a good enough, like, he's a good enough head coach. But the actual offensive brilliance side of it has just never been made apparent. I mean, they've never been higher than the 17th passing offense. Let that sink in for a moment. This is a guy that got his job partly because of his experience with Tom Brady in the New England passing offense. You know, there are other things with it too, but he's never been higher than 17th in passing offense.
Yeah.
Not even the top half of the league. Ryan Fitzpatrick last year with the Miami Dolphins was 13th in passing offense with the Dolphins and various other, like, so it, Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't get there with the Houston Texans. This is where this year, finally, I think you could make excuses for him all those years between Brock Osweiler, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, TJ Yates, any of those guys. You could make excuses. Now that you've got your franchise quarterback, there are no excuses. It is unacceptable to have your franchise quarterback here that you signed, that you drafted, and not be at the very least in the top half of passing offenses.
Ken sends a text in that captures, I think, how I feel about this to a T, Seth. And I and before I read the text, I feel like if you divide the league into thirds the way you did, I feel like O'Brien straddles the line between the latter two thirds that you talked about, the upper third and the middle third that you talked. I feel like he's somewhere around 12th, 13th, 14th, which is above average, which is what I said in my piece. Ken's text says this: Shawnee, just don't say that William O'Brien is an above average GM. Bingo. I think that's it. Yeah. I think if Bill O'Brien had a really good GM, we would probably be thinking of him as a head coach in a much more positive way. I do think that the moves he's made as general manager, and they may work out. One game in, they may not work out. But I do think that the impression of him as the head coach is definitely having some of the general manager stuff bleeding into that overall impression.
Right, and that's where it gets frustrating sometimes, where, you know, when asked about his responsibilities, on one hand, O'Brien will say that, he's doing the exact same thing he's always done. Okay, well then, are you then claiming responsibility for all the personnel mistakes right. that Brian Gain or Rick Smith have made? And what has actually changed now? And honestly, the other thing we have to add to this, too, is I have no idea how we're going to look at Jack Easterby a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. What could Bill O'Brien have been without Jack Easterby whispering in his ear? Or maybe Jack Easterby was the Bill O'Brien whisperer, and they figured it out, and those two will be all right. Right now, I'm pretty skeptical of that.
Yep, big time. One bad thing the Texans have been doing every week since week 9 of 2018, not just week 9 of last year, and it has to change on Sunday if they're going to win this game. It's a Football Friday. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. We get into that next. Yeah, it is a Football Friday. 3:25 kickoff on Sunday. Make a note. That means you get to do a little red zone channel surfing possibly on the early games. You lock in. And I would say with Seth and I on in the background doing the pregame show, Texans Countdown, on Sunday at 12:25, kickoff at 3:25. We'll be in the stadium, actually, so we will be... You know, keep following us on social media during the game and things like that. We'll be bringing you inside the stadium with the other 10 people who are in there.
No, I plan on going around and roving from tailgate group to tailgate group, violating all the COVID rules.
Are you bringing the COVID into the building?
No, you know what? I shouldn't even joke about that. I don't want my privileges revoked.
Glad you said that and not me.
Of course I'm not doing that.
Yes.
And honestly, 100%, because now I'm genuinely paranoid about that. Yeah. Aside from the fact that I would never do that, Sean, We have to be in the stadium even before tailgating will be allowed.
Yeah,
right? It's an impossibility.
It's an impossibility. So we'll be in the stadium. Now, what you may do is bring your thumb.
Oh wait, of course.
In
what am
cheer.
I talking about? There's no tailgating. What the? You see how messed up I am in the brain right now
right.
about all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Sean and I will be there as media members, but obviously there are no fans.
Seth, you know what they say? That's 2020 for you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. That's just gonna keep
maybe they should
that.
Have a. Maybe people should organize some little tailgating along Kirby Drive or something.
Okay, well, we'll let you encourage people
spot.
To gather randomly around society during these times.
You know, and you don't have to necessarily tailgate. Just go to Shipley's or something
there
and call
you go.
It a tailgate.
Eat some donuts. So, Seth, something the Texans have not done since week 9 of 2018, and I know that this was sort of a theme last year, but I had never gone through the exercise of going back to see just how far it went. But I think people probably know where I'm going with this. The Texans did not engineer a single touchdown drive on an opening drive in the regular season with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. So that's the caveat. A.J. McCarron engineered one in week 17 against the Titans, and Deshaun was able to score a touchdown on the opening drive in Kansas City with that bomb to Kenny Stills.
Do you think in training camp this year, O'Brien had A.J. McCarron get up and perform a presentation to Deshaun about how to score on the opening drive?
I hope not, because A.J. McCarron stunk in the preseason this year. He was terrible.
Yeah, he's got one more opening drive touchdown than Deshaun Watson had last year.
Over the last year and a half in the regular season, he sure does. The last time Deshaun Watson engineered a touchdown drive on the opening drive in the regular season was week 9 of 2018. By the way, Seth, it was a 7-yard touchdown pass to a fellow by the name of Jordan Thomas. Remember him?
Never heard of him.
Yeah.
Boy, it was just a hell of a blitzkrieg attack they got right there, don't they? You just come on in. Everybody's quaking in their boots when it's a Bill O'Brien game plan. That's when they're on script. This is what annoys me so much about them not scoring. That's when you're on script. That's what a lot of teams have. They're at their absolute best because the defense doesn't know quite what you're doing. You've been practicing these plays more than any other plays. You're ready to go. You know what you're doing. Like, you come out, man, sometimes the defense is reeling, like on their heels, just trying to figure it out. But nope, not when the Texans.
Yeah, Seth, I feel like I'm mind bleeping myself. Like the previous segment, I'm fending people off, defending Bill O'Brien's above averageness. And now here I am going, look at how much they stink with his offensive coach who's scripting a drive.
But the plus side is that last week I thought Tim Kelly looked good when they were on script. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, their second
not
drive.
The first drive, but the second drive. But still, like the first quarter scoring hasn't been all that great either, Sean.
Yeah.
So the fact they scored a touchdown in the first quarter was progress.
Fair enough. Here are the stats for it's been 23 regular season games since Deshaun Watson has engineered a touchdown on the opening drive. The numbers go like this. 14 punts, 5 field goals, 3 fumbles, and an interception. Of those 14 punts, Seth, 8 of them were 3 and outs. So 8 times, nearly a third of the time, the last 23 regular season games with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, a third of the time they walk out, run 3 plays, and jog back to the sidelines. This can't happen. Seth, they average on their opening drives with Deshaun Watson at quarterback over the last year and a half in the regular season, they average 6 plays for 19 yards on their opening drives. Seth,
plays for 19 yards?
That is their average opening drive with Deshaun Watson at the helm over the last year and a half in the regular season. Seth, that is 3.1 yards per play. For the unindoctrinated to the yards per play metric and what it means, to me it's the most meaningful raw stat that isn't all nerdy. You know what I mean? Like, yards per play is a really good measurement for just how efficient and good a team is. 3.1 yards per play. How bad is that, Sean? Listener, it is this bad. 3.1 yards per play. Just so you know, the worst offense in football last year, the worst offense in football, averaged 4.6 yards per play over the entire season. That's the New York Jets. So on opening drives with Deshaun Watson at quarterback over the last year and a half in the regular season, the Texans have had an offense that is an equivalent to an offense that is 33% worse than the absolute dregs and the crap of offense in NFL football.
Yeah, it's really, really bad. And that's with it. And apparently it was all DeAndre Hopkins' fault. You know what?
Seth, you know what's funny
too
about that?
Too much DeAndre Hopkins, not enough Randall Cobb.
You know what's really funny about that? In rewatching the Ravens-Texans game from last year, and I know you rewatched it too, so I know you're gonna relate to what I just said. Early in that game, DeAndre caught like 4 balls in the first 8 minutes of that game, and they all moved the chains. They were all chained, right? Like, can't you see O'Brien watching that game? Like, we're not really getting out of the gates awfully fast in this game. What's the thing that's in common? Looks like DeAndre's been the one catching everything in sight.
Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien were sitting around in February and thinking, God, we've been so bad on opening drives. We've been so bad in the first quarter. Yeah. Well, we can't get a really good passing offense going. What is it? And then all of a sudden, like, the light bulb went off over Jack Easterby. He was like, hey, what if the problem is DeAndre Hopkins?
He's catching too many balls early in the games.
It's not.
Hey,
why do we suck
Jack,
on offense?
He's the only thing that's moving the chains early in the game. Well, if we get rid of him, he won't be the only thing moving the chains anymore.
Okay, well, no, but realistically, he's making too much money. We can't afford other guys. So, okay, so what do we do? Well, we get rid of his salary and spend more on other guys that won't do anything for
right,
us.
That's
right. How we're going to. And also, some of these other guys that aren't good enough, let's give them more money. Some of the guys we already have, let's give them more money.
713-572-4610. This has to stop. And I'm not even going to make this. This has to stop this weekend against the Ravens. I mean, it does. It would be nice if they scored first, especially against this team who we're not really sure how they're going to react to being behind in a game because they're ahead so often. It would be nice, but it needs to stop overall, and it's so funny. Here come the texts. Sean, this is right after you called O'Brien above average. I know. Here's the thing, texter. Don't tell anybody this, okay? Don't. But if you take both sides of an argument, then you're never wrong.
No. Oh. No, that's the beauty of mediocrity. This is the. You know what's interesting, Sean? I've noticed this as I got into an argument with somebody yesterday who was trying to tell me that the Texans are worse than the Browns. And I said, look, I'm not sticking up for Bill O'Brien, but I don't think you understand the depths to which the Browns have been. The Browns went a three-year period from 2015 through 2017 where they won a total of four games. Yep. Did they average four wins? No. A total of four wins over the course of three football seasons. That's how bad they were. But like people think that mediocre actually means worst. And like, no, mediocre means exactly what Bill O'Brien has been. Actually, Bill O'Brien's been a little bit above mediocre. This is the problem. I think Bill O'Brien is above average as a head football coach. I think Bill O'Brien has been below average as an offensive coordinator. I think Bill O'Brien as a general manager has also been below average. Yeah. The equation is like the more job titles he takes on, the math is starting to really work against him. Because now he might be okay as a head football coach, but he's still, and I'm not convinced he's not still the offensive coordinator. As an offensive coordinator and as a general manager, he's not doing so hot. Yeah. So the head coach now is in the position of having to rescue both the head coach, the general manager, Bill O'Brien, and the offensive coordinator, yeah. Bill O'Brien.
If you had the under for 1.5 weeks into the season where we would be accusing O'Brien of doing a Tim Kelly puppet regime, as the just engineering a puppet regime through Tim Kelly on the offense, yeah. You win if you cashed on the under. All right, let's drop a phone call in here, 713-572-4610. Let's get the people in on a Football Friday here presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Let's go to Biscuit. Biscuit, you're on Payne and Pendergast. What's going on?
Hey, what's happening, my brother?
How you doing?
Hey, man, in my opinion, my assessment of Bill O'Brien is like you guys said, he's steady. And there's a lot to be said for steady. But, however, steady don't always lead to, you know, moving up. And I think he's shown, we've seen it, he can right a ship if things go bad. But how about getting things going good before things go bad? You know, it just seems like they have to step in the mud before he, whatever reason, they get moving. And it's been a history of that. And I don't know what leads to that or why, because it seems like he's a very competent coach, but it just seems like maybe it's his lack of flexibility or his not timing a lot of times. Because another argument is Bill O'Brien is not innovative or not take chances, and then all of a sudden he takes chances at the wrong time. Yeah. And so he's like, man, what was that? You know. So
yeah.
I just think if he wants to be more on the cutting edge, but he got to pick the right spots. But losing top-level talent will not help you do that.
No, it won't. Biscuit, we appreciate the phone call.
There's something, like, as Biscuit's explaining it there and talking about just there's something where sometimes you can get to a certain point, but then ultimately it holds you back. And I can't stop thinking about the phenomenon of, let's call it Whiskey Johnson, where when you got the Whiskey Johnson, and yeah. It's like, yeah, it does certain things for you. It helps you last longer and what have you. And maybe it makes you better in one respect, but ultimately you're never going to be the world's best lover if you're relying on the Whiskey Johnson to always bail you out. Yeah. And I feel like O'Brien does certain things that gets his team to a certain level. But then after that, it's just you got this offense has Whiskey Johnson.
Yeah.
It's one or two extra shots beyond the point of ideal returns.
I have no idea if the Texans are ready for this game on Sunday. I have no idea if the coaches, the players, the staff, I have no idea if they're ready. Seth Payne is ready for this game on Sunday. Seth Payne is bringing his game on a Football Friday. Whiskey Johnson?
Yeah, the Whiskey Johnson.
All
sometimes
right.
The Whiskey Johnson gives you great gifts, and other times it just embarrasses the hell out of you.
Fair enough. 713-572-4610. If you want to get in on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo.
That analogy brought to you by years and years of lulling women into thinking I had more endurance than I did based on the fact that I was drunk the first time we hooked up.
That's right. Yeah, appropriate that we're going to the break mentioning Carbox Hopadillo IPA.
I'm
sure Carbox thrilled. Yeah. All right. It is a Football Friday here on Sports Radio 610. Carbox Hopadillo IPA presenting this show to you. 713-572-4610. Did the Titans give the blueprint to the Texans for an upset on Sunday? Seth Payne draws some keys to Sunday's game out of film from last year's Ravens playoff loss. Next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Good to be with all of you. 713-572-4610. 4-6-10. All right, so Seth rewatched the Titans win over the Ravens. You know, it just gets a little too depressing to rewatch the Ravens destroying the Texans in Week 11 last year, and it gets a little scary watching the Ravens decimate the Browns last week because of the recency. And it can just be soul-crushing to watch the Texans lose to the Chiefs again last week. So at some point, you need to watch something that gives you a positive outlook on life and say, maybe the Texans can do these things. And sadly, it is Houston's former football team that we are looking to for some of these things. But it is what it is. This is the team that knocked the Ravens out of the postseason last year. So Seth rewatched that. Ben, give me a little mood music here to get us in the proper frame of mind. Seth Payne has pulled five keys to the game after rewatching the Titans beating the Ravens last year in the playoffs. Seth, the floor is yours. What is key number one, my friend?
Key number one, and I'll wrap all this in together. I'll wrap two into one really here. Okay. You've got to win the short yardage situations because the Ravens are very aggressive on fourth down. They've got Lamar Jackson. Why shouldn't they be? And John Harbaugh has full bore embraced all the little nerds in his building and made them his friends because he's into the analytics. And he's going to do – like John Harbaugh – is the nocturnal emission dream of a lot of the analytics types. Because this is like an old school football dude who said, like, you know what? Jesus, and by Jesus, I mean Jesus, the guy that works in his analytics department. Jesus, take the wheel. And when it comes to these situations where the nerds tell me to be aggressive, by golly, I'm going to be aggressive. And they're going to go for it on fourth down. In this game, they went for it twice on fourth and one. And the Titans stuffed them both times. They did it by winning in the trenches. The defensive linemen just flat out won their physical battles. They stood up the Ravens' offensive linemen. They made it really, really hard for Lamar Jackson to get anywhere, you know. And I think the Texans are capable of doing that, regardless of how well they played in the run when they were in their nickel defense. A lot of that, less of that was due to actual defensive linemen getting beat than I realized. When I went back and I watched the All-22, early in the game, when the Texans were still in their heavier formations and their regular defensive personnel with three defensive linemen and four linebackers, they were doing a pretty good job standing guys up and winning physical battles. It was when they got into nickel that they struggled to stop the run. So I think the Texans are capable of doing this. There will be a couple times in this game where Lamar Jackson's going to go for it on fourth down. You absolutely 100% need to win those situations if you want to have a shot at winning this game.
Yeah, that's key one. You said you were combining two. So that one combined with, I would imagine, the other one about Lamar Jackson, right?
Well, no, just winning in the trenches.
Oh, winning in the trenches. Gotcha. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Winning in the trenches. Like, fourth and one is kind of combined with winning in the trenches.
Sure.
Now, the Ravens went for it four times on fourth down. Two of those were in the fourth quarter. There was the last two drives of the game.
He had to.
You know, Lamar. Yeah, he had to. Well, they had to. I think some coaches might have just tried to massage the score
there. I like to think they had to.
They might have tried to kick an easy field goal, for instance. Maybe look like you didn't score just 12 points in this game. But yeah, they did the right thing.
They did. All right, so what is the next key to the game? Seth Payne rewatching the Titans win over the Ravens last year on a Football Friday, Seth.
This is big, and I'm going to call out two individuals specifically that need to be really good in this game, in the run game, on defense. And one is Bradley Roby, and I think he's up to it. And the other is Lonnie Johnson, who I don't know if he's up to it or not because I didn't get to see him play in meaningful snaps as much last week. I thought he's made improvement as a player when I saw Lonnie Johnson out there on the field. He's not using his hands as much. I think he made improvement. But if he starts this week like we expected him to last week, I think that it's vital that he and Bradley Roby come up, especially when Lamar Jackson's running on quarterback sweeps. When they recognize run, they got to get up in run support. Because Lamar Jackson, because he's so ridiculously fast, he has this ability to take a defense that has done everything right on a play and make them wrong. Like all he needs is one person to not be perfect on a run play, and Lamar Jackson can make that defense pay. And a lot of times that ends up being the defensive backs in run support because they're so worried about the speed of Hollywood Brown or the play action, all that they need to be really, really dialed in.
How good are the Texans' corners and secondary as a whole, but really the corners when it comes to tackling? And the reason I ask that, Seth, is because I feel like for years – I think the Texans fans were kind of spoiled for years and years with the pairing of Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson at cornerback. Those are two, I think, really good, solid tackling cornerback. For Kareem, that might have been his forte. It might have been his run support. That's why he's a safety now. You know, I think Texan fans were spoiled for a lot of years because Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson, both really good tacklers. How good is this crew when it comes to tackling, in your estimation?
I think that, I mean, they're not as good as the old ones were, right? I mean, part of it with Vernon Hargraves, just he's a little guy who doesn't have, like, he's not one of those rare little dudes who just somehow ends up being way more physical tackler than you expect him to be. But I think Bradley Roby, aside from tackling, just has a good understanding of how to take on blocks and how to come up and run support. But I think Justin Reed is a good tackler. He wasn't last week. There are a lot of guys that are normally good tacklers who just looked a little bit out of it last week. I think that's going to get cleaned up. Lonnie Johnson is the guy that is not as good a tackler as his body frame would suggest. Yeah. Or at least he wasn't last year. I think because he's been working on his footwork, that should improve. I mean, because what I saw from him, and I only watched him when he was in coverage mostly. I locked in on him on the All-22 when he was in coverage. Last year, he had a tendency to want to reach and grab. He didn't trust his feet. We know that he worked all offseason on his footwork. There are all kinds of videos out of him. It was really cool. But I wanted to see it show up. When I saw him play on Thursday night, he was using his feet instead of his hands in a good way. He was using his feet to get him to the spot instead of lunging out and reaching after guys and either whiffing or getting flagged or what have you. So that serves somebody well in the as a tackler too, because a lot of tackling is like, what they say is you want to get up, you want to be able to step on the guy's toes before you actually tackle him. You want to get up with your hips right up to your target, and then you follow through. And if you don't trust your feet, you can't do that. So hopefully this year Lonnie Johnson looks a lot more like a big physical dude that he is. He's built like that. He just needs to play like
all right,
it.
Nice. A little Lonnie Johnson optimism getting dropped in this segment here. All right, two more keys for the Texans against the Ravens this Sunday that Seth may have pulled from the Titans win over the Ravens last year. Seth, what's the next one?
I would say just simply pick up the blitz. And this is partly based on the Titans offensive line playing very well in the playoffs last year. I think the Titans offensive line, I wasn't all that impressed with the first half of the season last year. And then I think they figured it out, and a lot of that coincided with Ryan Tannehill coming in, going to more of a play-action attack, allowed these offensive linemen to be physical at times to just really gel. And they did a good job picking up the blitz in this game. Earl Thomas actually had a really good play on a safety blitz that the Titans didn't pick up. You can't let that happen. And the Texans last week were really bad against some of these blitzes. And it was a shame because there were times where everybody else did an awesome job picking up the blitz, but one person made a really, really bad mistake, and that's all it takes. And it's fine if, man, sometimes a blitz beats the scheme. It's just a well-called blitz versus a blocking protection that isn't equipped to handle it. I thought Deshaun, Tim Kelly, all of them, they schemed against the blitz well last week, but they had too many mental errors in trying to execute the scheme. That's got to get cleaned up really quickly. Because otherwise, Deshaun's going to get killed. Deshaun's going to suck. Bill O'Brien will, well, okay, anyway. I was about to say Bill O'Brien might get fired, but like, oh, yeah.
I think the frustrating thing is these are five intelligent human beings they've got on the offensive line. You know what I mean? Like, Laremy Tunsil is a smart left tackle. Max Sharping, that's all we hear about is how smart the guy is. Nick Martin, well-educated. These are five guys, Seth, along that offensive line who I think are thought to be pretty intelligent guys making a bunch of mental errors out there.
Look, Sean. There's book learning, and then there's street smarts. Yeah. And sometimes the two are almost mutually exclusive.
Yeah, and at Notre Dame, we got both. All right?
Yeah, they can. You got to have a certain kind of street smarts.
The means.
Just trying to make your way through. Yeah. And so I think that there is something to that. Like in football, book smart is like, oh yeah, I can put it up on the whiteboard.
Yep.
I can hit the right button on my iPad. But when you see it at field level and people are trying to bash your head in as you're also trying to think, sometimes guys aren't so smart out there. And that's what the Texans showed evidence of last year. They looked like a bunch of dependable, tough, smart classroom guys.
Yeah.
Like, go out there and be a dog on the football
field. That's right. All right, last one, Seth. Last key to the game for you.
This is simply build a lead early. And I know that sounds simple, and I know that sounds stupid, but Lamar Jackson, as awesome as he is not Pat Mahomes. Lamar Jackson, maybe because he hasn't had as much experience doing it, is he starts to press when he's playing from behind. I wanted to blame the play calling last year. I wanted to say that, man, I thought John Harbaugh abandoned the run too early. I don't think he did. I think the Ravens were still driving the ball well after they had gone down to a deficit. They still had plenty of time to come back. But Lamar Jackson started making bad decisions, both as a passer and in the pocket with his ball security. So if you get the lead early, Lamar Jackson so far doesn't have many people's faith when it comes to playing from behind.
Yeah, well, easier said than done, Seth, as I illustrated in the previous segment. With Deshaun Watson quarterbacking over the last year and a half in the regular season, the Texans are averaging 3.1 yards per play on opening drives of games for them. So that's really, really bad. So you're right. They need to getting out to a lead, getting off to a start that inspires a little bit of confidence would be nice. I mean, I would imagine, forget about what the fans think at home. There will be no fans in the stadium, but the stadium, when you're at the stadium, it's palpable to start feeling people go, oh, here we go again. For your own benefit, Texan players, go out there and do something on an opening drive. Give yourselves a little confidence to get the game started.
Yeah, and look, the Ravens have a better defense than the Chiefs, I think. Even after the Chiefs' impressive performance last week, I still think the Ravens is a better overall defense. So that's a tall task. But just remember that the Texans jumped out to a lead against both of the last Chiefs games. So it doesn't help you as much versus the Chiefs. It's not like they're incapable of doing it. They've played well in first quarters before. They were moving the ball versus the Ravens last year. They just kept shooting themselves in the foot. At some point, Sean, I'm glad you went through all those first drive stats from in the last segment and showed just how bad they've been really for the past two calendar years.
Yep.
They'll never be a good offense until they get over that hump.
Yeah.
There's just somebody, please, honestly, we've got smart listeners that are good at looking this stuff, or maybe, you know, please show me a good offense who hasn't been good on opening drives. I can't imagine that there's one. Maybe there's an exception back from 1967 or something.
Yep.
But that's first and foremost. You got to get off to a fast start.
It's a Football Friday presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA. Those are Seth Payne's keys to the game. So now you are smarter when you talk to your friends later on today about this game coming up this weekend. Let's go to the phone, 713-572-4610. Let's go to Zachary. Zachary, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. How are you this morning?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Actually, thank you for the compliment you guys gave me yesterday.
Is Zachary the good caller?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I'm calling today because you guys was talking about the offensive play call on the first drive. And you know what? If you haven't noticed, last year they had the same situation going on with them as well. And it wasn't until they actually went against Kansas City the first time last year that, and if you paid attention to the interviews after the game, Deshaun came up and said on the podium saying that the mentality was that they had to get at least 4 yards every down, 4 yards every down. So at least by the time you get to third down, and that's when they started doing, if you pay attention to the game, on the fourth downs, they was going for it on fourth down. Well, now it's time to revamp that same idea, that same ideology, or kick it up a little bit, you know, 5 yards per down, 5 yards per down. And especially when the first play, every time Bill O'Brien steps on the field with the team, the first play is a run play. So we got to make that be successful. We haven't had a successful run game or a player at least averaging at least almost 5 yards per game, you know, since Aaron Foster back in 2010.
Yeah.
So we got to find a way to where we can make sure that offensive line is solidified. We say it's solidified, but when we're looking at it for the run game, it's not where it needs to be at. We're not as adequate as we thought we were. We got a lot of things that we're missing, and we need to go back and look at it to reshape it to get it to where we need it to be.
You know, the interesting thing about that Texans victory in the regular season last year was that they had such a slow start. You know, as we're trying to get the Texans off to a fast start, they started off down 17-3 in that game.
They fumbled on the first play from scrimmage.
Yeah,
in that game.
And then they had a 12-play drive, but it was a field goal drive in the second. So I guess their first real drive in that one, at least they did well, but they got off to a slow start. The biggest thing about that game, and what was so exciting at the moment, even though Pat Mahomes was injured, whatever, Tyreek Hill had just come back, the really exciting part about that game was that was when the Texans unveiled that little RPO to Darren Fells.
Yep.
That was so effective, and you were waiting for that to maybe develop into more, or for them to create more of a package off of that. Felt like it got less effective as the season went along, as teams started to figure out when it was coming and how to defend it. But that was what I remembered about that game. And whether you want to call it ingenuity or creative play calling or whatever you want to call it, The problem is it always has to be paired with good execution. And I thought about that when I was watching the Chiefs game, where there was a Travis Kelce screen. And, Zach Cunningham missed a tackle on the play. But, frankly, that was one of the plays where I can't fault Zach Cunningham because it was the play was so well executed. It wasn't just a matter of saying, like, oh, well, here's what we'll do. We'll have Travis Kelce hang around for a little bit until everybody rushes, and then we'll throw the ball to Travis Kelce. And then we'll hope that they block people downfield. Like, no. They executed the fake perfectly. The other offensive lineman executed the fake screen blocking perfectly. Travis Kelce made it look like he was genuinely staying in the block and not going out on a route. And by the time they executed the screen, he had 5 yards before there was anybody else within sight of him. And it was all because it was a relatively creative play, but it was just executed to perfection. And when I've seen the Texans try to be creative, or when they are being creative, the first thing I think is, oh, crap, don't screw this up. Because it rarely feels like they've even practiced it during the week. And it's all the hallmarks and signs of a team that's trying to win on the whiteboard instead of actually winning on the field. They're trying to scheme without actually backing it up with honing the details of the play. And you just can't win in the NFL that way. It doesn't work. It needs to be about precision on offense. And I guess maybe that word precision is what frustrates me the most. I've never once felt, ever, in the time that Bill O'Brien has been here, like there's any level of precision on the football field. It feels like a whole bunch of like, hey, this is probably the best play. Let's roll with it.
That's a really good way to put it. Really good way to put it. All right, he's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. We are Payne and Pendergast on a Football Friday, presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA. Easily the hardest 3-game start to a season in franchise history. No question about it. How hard? We will quantify for you next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.